The stain face is telling you how a horse runs early and how well he sustains how well he runs early to the finish of the race. So remember, sustained pace is not late pace. Third fraction is late pace. Or if you're using energy, it breaks it down into half furlongs. But don't confuse sustained pace with late pace. Okay, we understand that one now. What was the first factor that produced the winner in the top four 68% of the time? Anybody? Factor W. Factor W is a combination of early pace and sustained pace. It has undergone some very slight deviations in the Brohammer-Purdy atmosphere because Tom used it as a variant maker and he refined it slightly, but it makes very little difference whether you use Tom's version of average pace or factor W. The combination of the early and sustained elements of a race produce the first composite rating in which, by research, gave us a satisfactory number of horses in the top four to say we were on the trail of a successful methodology. Now, the other factor that we put in there was factor X. X was very interesting in that Huey Maul, when he was publishing his magazine up here called Frontline, published factor X. In fact, if he put out a computer program or a TI-59 programmable calculator program just using factor X. And at certain tracks, at certain distances, the letters began to pour into him and to Phillips Racing Newsletter. This is before I was even involved in thinking I would ever go public with this. How great Factor X was working. Well, when I finally decided I'd find out what this thing, he referred to me as an anonymous retired California doctor, I decided, boy, this is pretty good. I'll give it away. I'll let John Meyer have it. You all heard of John Meyer? Well, I offered it to him, and he says, I'll do my own research, thank you. So I get a little miffed, so I said, hell, my gosh, I did it for 39 convicts, I'll do it for some more people, maybe get a couple hundred people, share this with. So Harry Smith is the guy who runs the Smith's Newsstand in Los Angeles. He was about 81 years old then. I guess he's 95 now or something. Isn't he? He's still around. He has retired. Oh, good. Anyhow, when I went down to buy the books and learn about this thing, because you see, in order to teach the first grade, the teacher should have graduated from the first grade. That's really the only requisite in our educational system. You must be a second grader to be able to teach first graders. So I wanted to get rush up to the second grade so I could teach these people. So I went to Harry Smith, and he gave me all sorts of racing forms, discounts on books. He threw in a few freebies and everything. And I found out that there was an awful lot of strange stuff being written about handicapping. And that very few works really could contribute. Ainsley, while he's a brilliant writer, he had so many variables in his book that if we tried to figure out all those variables to win a race, we'd still be on the first race after 17 years. So the Huey Maul book, as you all know, was the one that started me on the road to success as a handicapper by extrapolating what he said and by advancing it and by building on it. So Factor X puzzled me when it came out in all the publicity, Phillips Racing Newsletter with its glowing letters and Huey getting all these letters, and it puzzled me. Why is it so good for them and it doesn't work that well for me? It's a corollary. When you put the proper contenders in, they're usually in the top 3X. It's a corollary at a mile and in sprints and in some routes, but it's not as dependable in routes. It's not a static positive factor. And yet, to these people, it was, which taught me something. That certain tracks, this convinced me of something, certain tracks in certain parts of the country produce better results from a given rating than another one will. There's people were playing in the Midwest, in Omaha, Nebraska, Exarban, for instance. We're getting 70% winners from the top two Factor X, whereas somebody in New York was getting 30% winners. So it convinced me, as it should convince you, that you cannot take any rating, you cannot take any number, you cannot take any composite rating except W, and say that this is works for all time. The thing that really gets me upset is when one of you calls, or somebody from the methodology calls, and say, "Hey, Doc, I got it figured out. Man, I'm winning 80%. And he gives me some strange readout that's working that week at 80%. And you know, what are you going to say to the guy? "Hey, be careful. It could go away." "Oh, no, Doc, it's never going to go away. It's great." And then 2 weeks later, he's down in the doldrums. And this is what we mean when we say do a track profile. Know your track. Know what readouts are producing winners by distance, by surface, by track, and by the time of the year. Now as we advanced forward, we decided, when I was asked to do Expo 84, I decided, hey, wait a minute, we better give them something dynamically new. So in relationship to this differentials by track, by some readouts being more effective at certain tracks and certain distances, what have you, that if we produced a artificial energy readout, it would give people the opportunity to know how their track was running relative to the early, late energy distribution of winners. And if they played exotics, the energy distribution of place horses and even show horses. And so this embryonic formula of percent early was developed just in time for Expo 84. That added another dimension. For instance, it was being held at the Meadowlands in New Jersey, so we found out that certain tracks, like the Meadowlands, used more early, and that Belmont had a higher percentage toward the later part of the races, and we were able to delineate by distance, by track, by surface at a given time, how much early energy percentage a horse needed to win there. The problem with that was people like Brohammer could use that and did continue to use it until just recently. The problem with that was that the parameters on early, like 54 to 46, could be so great that people wanted narrower parameters. So they could say, well, between 52 and 53 or 48 and 49 is good, but boy, when you get a wide range of 3 or 4 points, it's very difficult to draw any conclusions from it, unless you're a Brohammer or a Marion Jones. So we developed a true formula where the actual percentage of energy distribution by fraction was given, which was a forerunner of energy. For instance, a horse may, of its total energy, it may distribute 36% in the first fraction, 34 in the next fraction, and 30 in the final fraction, adding up to 100% of its energy. And if you add the first two fractions together, you get numbers in the 60s, and you're able to say better, anything under 67 at this distance at this track never wins, anything over 70 at this distance at this track never wins. And it was able to make narrower parameters so people could know what they were looking for more finitely, not with such a broad range. So these were unique factors that we brought into the methodology, but on the other hand, unique though they are and powerful though they are, it goes back to that juggling. If you can't juggle the three balls or the three ten pins or whatever they juggle, if you can't juggle three fractions and make something of them and throw in the second call and make something of that, then you ask somebody to juggle a fifth thing like percentage median, or then you want to give them energy and have to juggle paradigms and paragons and all sorts of other things, some people become hopelessly enmeshed. Now, this has nothing to do with your intelligence. Let me tell you this right off the bat. If you say, "I can't figure all those things out and I can't juggle all those pieces of data," that does not mean that you are subnormal intelligence. What we perceive as intelligence in handicapping, the best handicappers, are sometimes the least intellectual of people. Exception, of course, these gentlemen are intellectual in all ways. Brohammer washes his hands before meals, orders the finest wine, as does Marion. But there are some people that you would look at and think, hey, not too bright, who are some of the greatest handicappers in the methodology. On the other hand, there are some very, very bright people, some intellectual people with doctorates and master's degrees and MBAs and certified public accountants especially, and engineers with tremendous degrees who've built bridges, who can't handicap worth a damn because they're juggling all these things and they're dazzling the world with their ability to juggle, but they can't make a decision from what they're juggling. So you see, it's not a matter of intelligence. And we're going to have a gentleman tonight who'll be our featured speaker, who's a very brilliant educator in the Midwest, the Rocky Mountain states. It's based on your childhood learning patterns. How many of you remember when you went to school, the teacher getting up and saying, here are the rules for whatever the subject was? Anybody not remember this? Rules. Hey, there's a rule for everything. You know, everything is a time for everything, a place for everything, everything in its place. And the rules are this. And we got to thinking that you had to play by the rules. And life is a game of rules. And those who play by the rules will succeed. Well, you know that's a bunch of baloney. The people who break the rules succeed. But we have been conditioned. And then we went to church. We got commandments and rules, golden rules, silver rules, all kinds of great rules. We were raised on rules. Okay, what happens to a person raised on rules? And he decides suddenly, wakes up one morning. I don't know how this happened. Somebody might want to tell me. How did it happen to you? I woke up one morning, I decided I'm going to be a horse player. Anybody got a story? Hey, I'm gonna make my living handicapped. This is easy. Look at all those people going to that window. I'm gonna go do that. I don't know what happened to somebody. Is it happened like a conversion thing at church where you get up in the aisles? I've got religion. I just discovered I'm going to. Something happens and people decide, "Bae, this is for me." And you know, 90% of the people that happens to should never have happened to. Why? I know why, because that's my field, but why do people go into handicapping who have no business in handicapping? Because somewhere along the road of life, they got turned off by something. They got slighted, or they worked real hard and were getting nowhere, or people put them down because they're the color or their religion or their feelings or they walked with a limp or they had one arm shorter than the other, whatever the hell it was, they were going to overcompensate for some hurt in life by becoming a handicapper. Or, hey, all my buddies do it. I think I'll go out and do it. That's easy, I'll do it. Whatever the reason was, 90% of the people who do it shouldn't have because they have absolutely no sense of insight, no sense of the real reason people win. But that doesn't mean just because 90% shouldn't, that 90% can't make it. It just makes my job harder, and Tom's, and Marion's, and everybody who tries to teach it harder. But when you are rule-bound, and brought up to believe in rules, and brought up in the Judeo-Christian ethic of gambling is kind of a nefarious side-of-the-mouth thing anyway, and you suddenly decide you're going to flaunt your social background, you're going to flaunt the school system, you're going to flaunt the church and do something that you've been taught all your life can't be done, you know, you've bitten off a big something to chew. Now you take someone like Marion, he wanted to pull himself up, he was motivated, he didn't believe all those rules, he didn't want to sit in the back of the bus, that was a dumb rule as far as he was concerned, he didn't want to be held down, so he felt the rules are wrong, I'm going to violate the rules and I'm going to get into something which you succeed at by violating the rules. Brohammer's story is a marvelous one because both of his parents were into handicapping. They took him to the track when he was a little kid, you know. Instead of saying it's evil, they said, hey, this is what you do to keep off the street. And his brother's a professional athlete, which is another form of, like, horse racing. I mean, that's a one in a million shot, becoming a big league baseball player. So these people who succeeded, and my violation of rules all my life is somewhat legendary, and still is, we just don't believe in the system. We think that they're all wrong. In essence, I mean, we don't have to be antisocial about it, But for those who were conformists all their life, you have the toughest job to overcome. And what causes people not to succeed is because they want to listen to a voice other than their own. How many of you listen to, how many of you don't ever listen to any voice but your own? See, I don't get many hands on that one. If you listen to anybody else in this field, you're crazy. Unless you, like this gentleman here, he sought out one of our teaching members, Glenn Connolly, and he listened to Glenn. But Glenn was not giving him free advice at a racetrack just because he happened to be standing in the same line. I mean, he sought out a given teacher. The teacher appeared when he needed him. But those who make decisions and then turn to someone else, you think I did the right thing? Or who do you like? Boy, that's the worst one. If any of you are guilty of saying, who do you like? You have violated the principal code of a winner. If you answer, who do you like, or if you ask, who do you like, you have played what Eric Byrne called a game. A game is something where it seems overtly to be an innocent gesture, but which has a subconscious, perverse aspect to it. And who do you like is probably the most perverse question that can ever be asked, because if they give you the right answer, you're going to be dependent. If they give you the wrong answer, you're going to be hostile. You got to ask me, who do you like? Ah, the 3 and the 5. I wouldn't bet those horses with your money. Why'd you ask? So you have to be independent. All these numbers are good. Little horses running across the screen are good. Energy figures are good. But unless you depend solely on you, solely on your judgment, solely on you make it or break it on your own, you're going to be 5 years from now in a beginner's class wondering what you missed in the first beginner's class. It is a totally lonely business. Even when Tom Brohammer, who's probably the most social of all of us, goes to the track, he does not get affected by the decisions made by those experts he goes with. When Tom starts talking about a race, I run up and bet it the way I was going to win it, and then listen to him, because he's the only guy I've ever heard who can analyze a race before the race and still bet the right horse. Everybody else I've ever heard analyze a race before the race, oh, this one's going to go out and blah, blah, blah. They talk themselves out of it, or they're still talking when the window's closed. Don't try to pattern yourself after the personality of Tom Brohammer, after the personality of Marion Jones or Bradshaw or me or any of these people. Find what their goal is, which is winning, and keeping a personal equilibrium while they're at it. That's their goal. Duplicate their result, but don't try to duplicate their behavior, because we're all individuals, and each one of you is a precious individual. And if you say, hey, I'm a maverick, I'm going to do something that only 2% of the people who try can do consistently, you know right away you can't hang out with the 98% and be among the 2%. Anybody think you can? So when you ask me, hey, who can I talk to in my town, the answer is nobody, unless it's a qualified teaching member, and the latest list is in the manual that you'll get tonight. Now, if I say anything now that up to this point that requires any questions or answers, please ask them now. Boy, I'm getting succinct, huh?
You come right through it today.
Wow. Okay. I'm going to turn it over to Tom and Marion. Turn to Marion first, because he's a star. They go next to closing, you know. Marion's experience is, I think the experiences are more important than the numbers. A lot of people say, well, let's get down to the handicap in a race. Well, that's the last thing you do. You got to get it here, folks, first. At here. It's got to be in your heart and in your mind that you can do this. You got to have the inspiration. The information is all over the place. You go to Gambler's Book Club, they got a catalog of books that, like this, two of which are ours. The best two, as a matter of fact, are me. Outside the Race's Pace by Huey. And you get all the information in the world. But I'll guarantee if you just read those books and get the information, you won't be better off, any better off than you were when you got here. It's the inspiration. And I promise you that that's the truth. How do I know? 17 years now, I fought this battle. Hey, Doc, knock off all the psychology crap. Just show us who's going to win a race. How do you get the winner? You get the winner by opening up that inner ear, by opening up that eye that you does not see now. For handicappers or horse players have eyes that they see not, they have ears, yet they hear not. Because they are listening to the wrong voices and they are interpreting incorrectly from the words they hear and see. You got to open up. And that's why I believe that the inspiration of a Marion Jones and a Tom Brohammer, both of who came out of utter poverty. And we make a lot of jokes. Sure, we have a lot of fun with each other. And you will too. If you take this too seriously, remember the immortal words of Freddie Wakeman, who said, anything not worth doing at all is not worth doing well. I give you Marion Jones. No, Tom knew about those things. Tom has been converted to a program which we developed to try to emulate his brilliance through the computer. And we gave it to him as a present, say, Tom, we finally got a program that's almost as good as you are. And in that program, you have some readouts, which some of you may not be familiar with, which you will become familiar with tomorrow, but so that you won't ask what they are. The two things are hidden energy. Now, everybody here, anybody not know what hidden energy is? Okay, what fractions do the public see when they look at the racing form? They see the first fraction, the first, you know, he ran 22.2, and then they see 45 as a sprint, and they see 110. So what don't they see? They don't see the isolating of the second fraction, which we call variously the hidden fraction or turn time. They don't see that second fraction because they don't extrapolate it. They don't subtract the first fraction from the second call and get it and add or subtract for beaten lengths and lengths gained. So that is the first hidden fraction. The next hidden fraction, which public sees a little bit more, is the final or third fraction. By subtracting second call from final time, you get that fraction, adjusting for lengths.